chapelboro.com. Go there quick and stay a while. chapelboro.com. More of what you live here for. And now, welcome to Who's Talking with D.G. Martin on News Talk 1360 WCHL.
Welcome to News Talk, and this is D.G. Martin. Well, who is the who's the best storyteller in Chapel Hill? That's a tough question because we got lots of great storytellers, but a lot of people would tell you that it's Cliff Butler, who is a retired pharmacist and civic leader, and he's agreed to be my guest. And Cliff Butler, welcome. Will you tell us some stories?
I would love to, D.G. Thanks.
Well, I'm so excited to have you. Maybe I shouldn't tell you, but I've been trying to persuade you, I think, for about 7 or 8 years to come be on the radio, and for various reasons. So one of which is you were until just a year or two ago, you were working full time.
Right, and then I realized recently that you're getting old, and I better go ahead and do it.
Listen, I'm not getting old. I've gotten there, and it's wonderful. It's great.
Yeah, it is
great. You get all these great deals. You get to park for half price downtown in Chapel Hill.
That's wonderful.
You get a special deal on a very small cup of coffee at McDonald's, and if you go to the movies at night, you can get a couple of bucks off the regular ticket price.
Yeah, well, I love it myself.
In your, some of your stories have to do with old people. I mean, you know.
Oh, I was real lucky that I got to know my old people really well, and the blacks that traded with me. My daddy died when I was young, and I was raised by a black lady, and I listened to my first record I ever owned was Mahalia Jackson's Greatest Hits, and that was back in the days when you only owned one record for a while, and then the next birthday or Christmas you'd get your second record. But some of the stories I can't tell are about the eulogies I dealt with at some of the black churches that were wonderful. And actually,
well, let's see. You grew up in a pharmacy family,
right?
Right. And
my dad was a pharmacist and died when I was 12, and mother took over the store. And my experience early working was with my mother, who wasn't a pharmacist.
She was running the store. How'd she get the prescriptions?
Well, she had to hire. She had to have. And actually, Dad had a partner
had an associate
when he died.
Partner
so she just sort of took Dad's place, and she was faster and a better business person than all of them, both of them put together, actually. Actually, one of my early memories of Mama at the drugstore was in the early 60s, and she had bought as a display rabbit that was life-size. I mean, human life size, not rabbit life size.
To put in the window,
it was
six
feet tall, and it was for sale for around $40, which was a whole lot of money back then, and nobody would buy it at that price. And so, right before Easter, Mama, I have a picture of a memory of her on the standing on the counter on the fountain with this rabbit, which was as big as she was. And she did she sold raffle tickets for $1 and ended up getting over $100.
So she bought the rabbit for $40 and
she bought it for about $20 and was going to sell it for $40.
Nobody buy that.
Nobody buy it, but everybody put $1 in and they had this big deal raffle. And so she ended up making a whole lot more money, but it was all her personality was what sold it.
What's the moral of that story?
She was a good business person. She loved people and she loved getting to know people, which was, you know, that's a big part of pharmacy, getting to know your customers.
Well, what do you know about, I mean, pharmacy is, for some people, it's just doctor sends in the prescription and you go in and pick it up. But in the small towns, in the tradition that you developed, it was a little bit different.
Yeah, you knew the patient, you knew everything about them. You knew their parents, their grandparents, probably all their relatives. And by me being in the same store in Durham 36 years, I had that same experience. Over 36 years, I saw a 50-year-old become 86 years old and, you know, a 20-year-old become 56. And I went through their births and their deaths. And One of the things that affected me the most, I always read the obituaries, and I was reading a lady who had been in the store. She was just a little old lady to me. She was probably in her late 70s when I started working there in my 20s. And I read her obituary when she died and found out she had graduated from Harvard, been to MIT, was one of the first architects, first lady architects of note, worked for McKim, White, and what the big mm-hmm. architectural firm in New York, had consulted on some important buildings. None of this, you know, to me, she was just a little old lady. And then right after that, I went to a funeral of one of my favorite customers who I loved to talk to when he had come in. He was head of food services at Duke for the athletes. And for his last 10 years of his life, he was homebound, bedridden, and I had great conversations with him.
When, so you were talking on the phone with him?
On the phone, but I never went to see him. Uh-huh. But I went to his funeral. His name was Big Bill Jones, they called him. And it turned out that he was an Albert Schweitzer fanatic. Now, this is a big black ex-football player. And how he got interested in Albert Schweitzer, I don't know. But he took all the Duke athletes, four at a time, to his house, and Mary, his wife, would feed them a big country meal, and he would give them an hour lecture on Albert Schweitzer. And they said he had pictures of Albert Schweitzer, quotes of Albert Schweitzer on the wall, a bust of Albert Schweitzer. Anyway, and at the funeral, there were three of the ex-Duke athletes that had become preachers who did the funeral, and hearing all that, I realized I should have gone to see him. He was a real buddy, and for 10 years, I talked to him on the phone and never went to see him. And so that changed me as a pharmacist, those two people realizing I didn't know him as well as I should, and I really tried to find out everything I could about all my patients after that, and it made me a lot better pharmacist, I think.
Well, how in the rush of the modern world where everybody's in a hurry, how do you, and a pharmacist is under pressure to get the work done and be ready for the next customer. How do you manage it?
It's really tough. It's just if I had a chance, I sought out those people to find out. I had a customer who was in Auschwitz prison camp, and I'm sure I'm the only person he ever talked to that about, but it was because I got to know him well. And actually, after talking to me about his time in Auschwitz, he said he wasn't able to sleep for a couple of weeks. And then I had another customer who he was with Patton when they opened some of the other prison camps, not Auschwitz, but I happened to see them in the store. And that
at
was
the
something
same time,
at the same time, and I introduced them to each other, and they spent about an hour sitting in my waiting area talking to each other, and I saw them laughing, I saw them crying, and I was too busy to be part of it. And it was something that should have been taped, because they're both gone now, they're both dead now. That was another trick I had, though, but I got to know my patients so well that when they were waiting, they say you had a bunch of people waiting, I would introduce them to each other, and I knew things they had in common. And T-Bone Jones, another one of my favorite customers, was like an old vaudeville performer, and I could get him to entertain people out there. He did all sorts of magic tricks and told jokes, and he was just his favorite joke. It was not a joke, but every time he came in August, and it would be 100 degrees outside, he'd say, "Cliff, it's hot out there." He said, "I just saw a dog chasing a cat, and they were both walking."
I'm visiting with my friend Cliff Butler, who's a retired pharmacist, a great storyteller, and he's telling us a few. I think we about got him warmed up to tell us some more, and he'll continue to be our guest after this short break.
Chapelboro.com. Go there quick and stay a while. chapelboro.com. More of what you live here for. And now back to Who's Talking with D.G. Martin on News Talk 1360 WCHL.
Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. My guest is Cliff Butler. Cliff recently retired as a pharmacist. He's telling us some of the stories, the things that he learned. Grew up in Dunn, but has lived in this area in Chapel Hill for most of his life. Cliff, first of all, thanks again for coming. And tell us, if you will, tell us a little bit about growing up in your pharmacy family. You told us a little bit about your mom earlier, but a lot of people, when they grow up in a family business, they say the last thing I want to do is to be in this business, you know. But you followed in your father's footsteps and in your mom's footsteps as well.
And don't forget, I was in love with the daughter of the pharmacist who had the store across the street.
Oh, you were in love with a competitor?
Yeah, Linda's parents.
No, you're kidding me. Tell us that story.
Her mother and daddy are both pharmacists. Uh-huh. And her mother actually graduated in 1938 from UNC Pharmacy School.
And did their parents meet here?
They met down in Wilmington at Tom's Drugstore, where she was a pharmacist, I guess, and Herman was just working out front. He went in the Army, and after he came back from the Army, she talked him into using the GI Bill to go to pharmacy school himself. So anyway, she was a pharmacist probably 12, 15 years before he was.
So they married and then moved to Dunn, but your family had been in Dunn a while, I guess. Is that right?
Yeah, my family had been there forever, but there's a Chapel Hill connection there I hadn't thought about. John Grantham, who's here in town in our Rotary Club, DG and I are in the same Rotary Club, but his grandfather had a drugstore in Dunn that he sold to Tom Hood, whose daughter, I think it was, anyway, his daughter married Joe DeWalt, the doctor for the football team, the athletic program. And then he sold that store to Linda's daddy.
Oh, my golly.
So
after he had gone to the Army, then come back, gone to pharmacy school, gotten his degree, married Linda's mother, and then moved her to Dunn? Is that sort of what it
is? Actually, they got married before he went in the Army. So she was a pharmacist, and he hadn't found himself yet. And, so then after he went to pharmacy school, I think they went back to Wilmington for a while and saw that, anyway, this drugstore came for sale in Dunn, and that's how they ended up across the street from my daddy's drugstore.
So your daddy's got a drugstore, and then your mama ran it after he died, and then Linda's parents have a drugstore across the street. They're competing with each other. I mean, they're competing with each other for business. I mean,
right.
I guess it must have been a fairly good level of competition, no backbiting or anything like that.
The real competition came where our mothers were in the same bridge club, and that was vicious competition there. It was friendly competition. They went to different stores, they went to different churches,
uh-huh.
which when it comes down to it, that's probably the main reason we didn't go back to Dunn. We could have combined the two drug stores, but we would have had to choose a church, and my granddaddy built the church.
What
that
was
my
the church?
Family
what
was Hood church? Memorial Christian Church,
uh-huh.
and her dad was like head of the board of deacons at the Presbyterian Church. So it was.
If you'd gone back, then y'all couldn't have gone to church together.
I guess I'd have had to be Catholic.
well, that's great. Well, now, as y'all were courting in Dunn, and are you talking to each other about what you want to do when you grow up?
I never thought about that. I think she was always going to pharmacy school, and I was thinking I might go to med school until I took organic chemistry, and I thought they were teaching it in a foreign language. But it really worked out for the best because pharmacy was really good for both of us.
Well, you might have had the opportunity to work together.
That wouldn't have worked.
Why is that?
We're very different. We can barely live together at home. So we're very lucky that we were able to be in different stores all those years.
Have you got any more stories you can tell about your Dunn drugstore, your growing up story? You focus more on your characters maybe when you were an adult, but if you don't have a memory, I've got one I can get you to tell.
Well, I have a few. One time, this fella picked a prescription up and left it at the fountain when he got a drink, and I was delivering on my bicycle then. I was like 13, and they found the prescription up there and said, my mom said, well, you know where he lives, you know, take this by his house. And so I drive it to his house and knock on the door, and his wife comes to the door, and I said, your husband left this at the store. And she looked at it, and it was a prescription for his girlfriend.
Oh, no. Oh, come on now.
We thought it was a different name from him, so we thought it was an aunt or a stepson or we thought it was somebody.
Well, now, family. Did she tell you this,
she started screaming at me.
Oh, and, come on.
You know, well, screaming mad at him, but screaming right. With me standing there, and I knew I was in trouble with that guy.
I love it. I mean, so you knew what had happened.
Yeah.
You were in trouble. What were the consequences? What did he ever?
I just remember avoiding him for the rest of my life.
Is that right? Did you tell your mama what happened?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I had that.
Well, I'd hope he'd already paid for the prescription.
Oh, yeah, it was paid for. And I'm sure he paid for his sins after that, too.
I'm sure he did. The story I was going to get you to tell, and we've talked about this before, was the story about the this was during the time of the segregation, but there were black kids and white kids hanging around the drugstore. And you have a story about how that led to one of these secret basketball games.
Yeah. Well, Dick Knox was actually our coach, who is living in Chapel Hill now and was a fabulous—
Who's your basketball coach
in high school. Yeah, and he had just come out of Atlantic Christian College as a small college All-American and was an amazing talent basketball-wise. And he turned us into a good team somehow. When I look back at the how bad we were, and we won the conference our junior year, and we didn't have a senior on the team. So the whole team's coming back, and the black school, Hornet High School, had won their conference. And when we'd see their guys, we would—
This would be in about 1965 or so.
This was 63.
In 63.
Yeah, we'd tell them how lucky they were they weren't white, because they wouldn't have won if they'd been in our conference. You know, and they'd give us the same hard time. So we ended up having a game to prove who would be the best, and they couldn't come to the white school, so we went to this black school, Hornet High School, and we had a knockdown, drag-out game.
So this was a informal game.
Informal game.
This is interesting. I guess people can't believe it, but back in those days, I mean, there were a whole bunch of rules, but none of them made any sense. But the black kids would not have been allowed to come to the white school.
Right.
And actually, anybody
we couldn't get in it either. It was locked.
You couldn't get in that
gym. But their school, it was open.
Y'all got in big trouble or the black kids would have gotten in big trouble if they'd been there. Probably weren't supposed to be in the black school either, but you did.
Right, and there were 20 or 30 black fans there. We didn't know white fans, but we had everybody played hard, and they won the game because this little bitty guy, must have been 5'6" or 5'8", was just knocking down outside shots, and they won, but we left their buddies. And then the next day, and this is the part you're getting at, a local insurance agent, as I was walking down the street passing him, he grabbed me and pinned me against the wall and said, we heard what you did, and if anything like that happens again, they'll be held to pay.
And did he really scare you, or were you kind of laughing?
Oh, no, he really scared me.
He meant it.
Yeah.
So,
and he was coming from a different era,
right?
Than we were coming from, and so you know.
Well, you know, I don't know how y'all dealt with this, but we were growing up in those times, and we weren't challenging them as much as we maybe wished we would have. But did you kind of say, "Okay, we'll never do that again"? And did you report that to the black kids that you next time you saw them?
No, they didn't want to play us again because they were victors. we moved on at that time. It was, you know, football season was getting ready to start, so we had to get ready for that.
Well, we're visiting with Cliff Butler. Cliff is a retired pharmacist. He's a big civic leader in Chapel Hill, telling some of his stories about his profession, and we'll get him to tell us some more after this short break.
Chapelboro.com. Go there quick and stay a while. Chapelboro.com. More of what you live here for. And now back to Who's Talking with D.G. Martin on News Talk 1360 WCHL.
Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. I'm visiting with Cliff Butler. Cliff's my buddy, and he's a retired pharmacist. Cliff, I mean, are you going to be a professional? When you grow up, are you going to be a professional golfer or tennis player or what?
I just enjoy being with my buddies. You know, played tennis last night, and it was a lot of fun.
And more fun than golf?
Well, I play that this afternoon with a whole difference. My tennis buddies and my golf buddies, they don't know each other all that much. So I have a whole different group of friends because of both sports, and enjoy them all.
Having recently retired, I mean, are you missing your work?
Or do the I miss some of the people, and some of the people I'm glad I'll never see again.
What do you mean?
Well, there are a lot of people who played the system.
This is with your customers or your people?
Yeah,
How can you play the system in the world of today in pharmaceuticals? How do you play the system?
Well, this young lady, late 20s, she had married this Mexican guy to make him legal, and they'd paid her to marry him, and then she told me she was going to get pregnant. And I said, "You can't get pregnant taking the drugs you're taking." And she said, "Oh, yeah, her doctor had told her that she could, that the drugs wouldn't bother it." And I said, which one of your doctors? I said, "I need to talk to him." And she said, "Well, I can't remember which one said that." You know, so she did get pregnant. And she had a kid who clawed its eyes out, pulled its own hair out.
Oh, my golly.
They had to keep the kid in a straitjacket. There are no drugs that are tested on newborns, and so
this was as a result of the drugs.
She was taking huge doses of lots of drugs, and I think she knew this was going to happen because she ended up suing the drug company, suing Duke Hospital. I'm lucky she didn't sue me. She was just looking for people to sue. And of course, she goes in with this poor baby, and they had to use some drugs on her. Of course, they were guessing at the doses on the, you know. Anyway, I know when I retired, she was living at the beach and coming in once a month to get her medicine, and the child was being raised by some government agency. And, you know,
So this is the kind of experience that you're not, that wasn't a happy one for you.
Oh, not at all, yeah.
What about some of the happier? What are some of the people like that, some of your favorite?
I brought a letter I got from one customer, which he misspelled every word in here, but it said, "Dear Eckerts, regarding prescription number such and such, clonazepam himself needs a refill. Him knows it's overaged, but my sawbones has a push-button phone system that's even worse than yours. So please an old goat and do what's necessary. Fortunately, himself is in no hurry."
What did that mean?
That was a letter I got, and he wanted his prescription refilled, and he couldn't get my phone to work, and he couldn't get the doctor's phone to work. So he sent me that letter.
Well, some prescriptions are refillable and some aren't, I guess. Some have to have a doctor's.
Yeah, the time limit had run out on his. I actually made a list here of some of my favorite customers that were famous that came in my store over the years. Everett Dirksen was in when he was running for president. He had a daughter at Duke, and my favorite thing about that was one of my store manager came back to me and he said, "Cliff, I think they're having a deaf and dumb convention over at Duke." And I said, "What you mean?" He said, "Well, all these people are coming in with earphones." And it turned out the Secret Service was coming in ahead of him and coming in behind him. And so
did he come in the store?
He was just shopping for, actually his wife's getting cosmetics and stuff. And KC of KC and the Sunshine Band was in a lot. Jimmy Carter's lawyer was in. There's another example that I wouldn't have known that if I didn't, you know, get to know the guy while he was here. He was his business lawyer down in Plains, Georgia.
And what was he doing up here?
Losing weight, which is what of the famous people who come in, even Elvis Presley came up to Duke Diet and Fitness, I think it was.
So some of these,
Rice Diet.
Of the Rice Diet people would come into the store, need their prescriptions filled, and you get to know them.
Yeah, Duke Diet and Fitness, Structure House, and the Rice Diet. I seem to get most of those. Yeah, if you saw a 400-pounder coming down the aisle with a walker, you know that's where they were. I had one lady, she tickled me. Her husband, he was bringing her from New Jersey to the Rice Diet. And she would always get him to stop at the store like she needed something. And she would grab all the goo-goo clusters she could carry, and she'd bring them back to the pharmacy to check out because he could see the front checkout from his car. He'd be parked in the right at the front of the store. And she'd be eating the goo-goo clusters and throwing the empty bags at me to ring up. I've never seen anybody eat that many goo-goo clusters
fast.
She was 400 pounds and on her way. She wanted to make sure she had the maximum weight on before she started that diet.
Now what responsibility does the pharmacist who's acting in a non-professional way, just checking out stuff, does he have any extra responsibility other than just as a clerk?
And actually, I had another one who would get these big leather dog chews that you like a shaped like a bone that you have dogs gnaw on. And she would buy one of those, and while she was waiting for a prescription, she would stand out there chewing on this piece of leather and sort of growling. I mean, I think she wanted some food so bad she couldn't stand it. I had lots of adventures with my overweight customers.
That's interesting because a lot of people would be attacking their overweight condition with pharmaceuticals, and you'd have to, I mean, they would come in and get prescriptions, I guess.
They also had all the other health problems that go along with it.
What would be the kinds of pharmaceuticals that you would take to control your diet, and what might be some of the consequences for them?
Well, you know, you had the Fen-Phen, which ended up causing a lot of lawsuits. And luckily, these diets over at Durham really do work if you follow the diet and they put you on exercise programs. You know, they try to do it the right way. So that's why they've been so successful for such a long time.
Well, but what I'm saying is that people not on the Rice diet would also have their physicians would prescribe these medicines. And would you have to consult with them about the downsides of them, or is that the physician's response?
Well, no, I would too, but I would also tell them, every one of them, that exercise was the key. You know, it's what you eat and how much you exercise, and the pills just give you a little jump start.
We're visiting with my friend Cliff Butler. Cliff is a retired pharmacist, a storyteller renowned, and he and I will be back after this short break.
Chapelboro.com. Go there quick and stay a while. Chapelboro.com. More of what you live here for. And now back to Who's Talking with D.G. Martin on News Talk 1360 WCHL.
Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. I'm visiting with Cliff Butler, my friend, and Cliff is a retired pharmacist, just a well-respected member of our community and civic leader. But during the break, you said there's a story I hadn't told you.
And I'm famous for filling the greatest prescription in the history of pharmacy.
Now, wait, whoa. The greatest
prescription in the history of pharmacy, and I challenge any pharmacist to
have you
to come
been
up
recognized?
Well, I've mentioned it several times along the way.
And nobody's been able to prove you different.
Right.
All right, well, da-da-da-da-da-da.
Well, we had actually Amy Stanfield here in town.
Dr.
Stanfield.
Her father's a great surgeon.
Well, she was Amy Brain. Isn't that right?
Father-in-law, yeah. I guess, father-in-law.
Right, and... And so the Stanfields, this would be her husband's grandfather, was one of my favorite doctors. He was right around the corner. The corner from my daddy's drugstore.
I've got this wrong. Not a doctor, but a friend of one of my doctor friends.
Amy's a gynecologist.
Gotcha.
And her husband's grandfather was the doctor in Dunn. And he actually declared my father dead when he died of his heart attack. They were really close. But this prescription that I claim is the greatest prescription ever, obviously this patient had irritated him. And of course,
this is Amy's grandfather-in-law.
Right.
Dr. Amy Stanfield's grandfather-in-law wrote this prescription, and it's been so long ago we can tell this story.
Right.
And you're arguing that this is the greatest prescription ever written.
Right. And this guy, and he also liked to drink. Dr. Stanfield would have a drink or two. And so he had the bad doctor's handwriting and the handwriting somebody who drank too much might have. And so this guy handed me the prescription, and I looked at it. And of course, it was clear to me because I read his prescriptions all day long. And it said, give this son of a bitch something for his stomach and charge him a lot.
The customer, Dr. Stanfield's patient, obviously couldn't read that language, but you could. It was in his regular code. Now, was this prescription when you were a kid?
I was working there when I was in the Army. This was in about 1970, 71.
So you were, you'd finished pharmacy school. You were
a pharmacist. Yeah, I was at Fort Bragg and working.
Fort Bragg, and you just come home. You were so close you could come back home and do some work.
Right.
And what was your reaction when you saw that?
All I could do was look at the guy to make sure he hadn't deciphered it himself, and I could tell he hadn't. And so I told him it'd be just a few minutes. And back in those days, Donatel was a typical stomach medicine. I don't even think it's around anymore.
It's a prescription medicine.
Yeah, and it was cheap, but I think we doubled the price on that guy, was probably only $3 or $4.
You followed instructions and charged him that. I guess that points out, Cliff, that things have changed now with the various insurance and drug benefits. But back then, when you got a prescription, it was all patient having to pay cash for that, or almost all of that. And so what difference does it make to have third-party payers or the government payers on pharmaceuticals? We were using many more of them, I guess, and not paying for them.
Well, it's a lot. I think if you've got more skin in the game, you're maybe less likely to take too much, which is one of the arguments right now with Blue Cross. They're trying to get, I think, some co-pays up. I spent time in Denmark and went to a lot of pharmacies over there. I spent a day a week in the pharmacies, and they have a tiered program. Of course, their government pays for all the prescriptions, but if you've got heart medicine or diabetes medicine, the government pays for all of it. If you've got pain medicine, you may have a $5 copay. But if you're taking sleeping pills or nerve medicines, you may have a $20 copay. so they sort of tiered the diseases, I guess.
Well, what about the medicines that are not necessary for your health but improve the quality of your life, like Viagra? I mean, should the government be in the business of?
Well, if you're on Medicaid, they when I retired, they would let you get 2 a month. And so, of course, there were a lot of people arguing they needed more than 2 a month. And, of course, the people who didn't need 2 a month would buy them anyway because they could sell them for $10. So there was a great Viagra. I'm glad you mentioned that because I was about to forget one of my favorite customers who was, he was 98 when he got his first prescription filled. And I'd been filling.
You mean his first Viagra?
No, his first prescription.
His first
period.
Prescription ever. He was 98 years old.
Yeah, his wife brought it in, and I thought it was a son of hers or something. I didn't even know who he was at the time, and he had an earache and was getting an eardrop for an ear infection. And he became one of my best buddies. He lived to be 106.
And he'd come in the store.
And his wife, and he had gotten to a point where his skin was tightening back up. So he was looking like he was 70 or 75, but my favorite story about him, he was a wiry little bitty guy. If you can imagine Barney Fife at 98, well, he was actually 99 when he got his Viagra prescription.
Oh, come on in.
And his wife looked like a cross between a bulldog and Winston Churchill. She was a... Burly.
She was younger, or
no, she was. She was actually 6 years younger.
Uh huh.
But he gets this prescription for Viagra when he's 99, and I told him the things he had to worry about and look out for. And
when he came in with the doctor's prescription and
right.
handed it to you. And did your eyebrows raise when this 99-year-old guy wanted a prescription for Viagra?
No.
You got a trained face not to show surprise or anything when a customer brings in a prescription. You're just trained not to question it.
But when it was all over and he's taking it, he reached out and he grabbed my arm and he said, "Cliff," he said, "this won't make me hurt her, will it? She's such a fragile creature." And all I could, what made me get tickled about that was that he's the fragile creature. She wasn't fragile at all. I mean, she, like I said, she looked like a bulldog.
Well, and what was your answer to him?
And I said, no, don't you worry.
Now, did he continue until the day until he was 106?
Never got it refilled.
That was
at least not while I was there. Yeah,
one time.
But he was great because he was born in, I think it was 1898, and he gave me the idea when the year 2000 came that I had customers who were going to live through 3 centuries.
Mm.
And so I ended up, when they would come in, I'd get them to bring me a picture, and I had a big poster, and I was honoring all these customers who had lived for the 1800s, 1900s, and now into the 2000s, and I ended up with 5
oh my
customers.
Now, all of these are, of course, well over 100 by this
right.
time.
They're at least 101, and they were real proud to be up there. Well, I didn't put any more up there after the... You know, when the year 2002 came, and somebody might be 101, but they were born in 1901.
Right, right.
Well, they were upset about it.
They wanted it to be 100 year, a century.
100 year thing. So I ended up putting everybody that was over 100 on there. And then the HIPAA laws came along, and that was against the law.
So you couldn't even reveal, celebrate.
Couldn't show their picture, couldn't have their birth date.
Now, you could, as if they were a customer on the other side of the pharmacy, if they were regular customers for other purposes, the HIPAA law wouldn't apply to that. You can celebrate.
Yeah, that's true. We should have just moved it up to the front of the store. I didn't think about that.
Well, Cliff, we've just got a minute left, but I wanted you to talk a little bit. You're on the road to becoming president of the East Chapel Hill Rotary Club if everything falls into place. And I wanted you to just say a word about the service experience that you've had. You seem to be committed to the kinds of things that that club is doing and other service projects in the community.
Well, it's just one of the many clubs in this town that does good work. We're getting ready this Thursday night. We'll get to, at the Legion Hut, we'll make about 50 bicycles that we put together, and luckily Performance Bicycle helps a lot with that, and they'll even send a technician in to make sure we have done them correctly, that we give to Family House, they give away to the kids at Christmas.
Well, that's great.
We've done that for years. And we have a bunch of dentists and other healthcare professionals that go to Honduras and do free dental care every year.
Well, you're in the middle of all of that, and sometime I want you to come back and talk about those kinds of things. But I have to tell you, I've been looking forward to this visit with you for a long time, and you hadn't let me down. You told me some great stories, and thanks for sharing your experiences with your friends in Chapel Hill, and thanks for all you do, Cliff.
Thanks, DG.
And thanks to you for listening. This has been Who's Talking, and it's DG Martin. I'll be back here before you know it.